If you love what you hear, check out our authors Andrea Stewart and N.A. Fulton on Amazon.com, and be sure to subscribe to our Dark Romance Novels and Stories podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. Learn more about us at audioiron.com.
Love great stories well told? Visit audioiron.com to find the best in audio fiction. Chapter 2. Seated in a lantern-lit coach, riding through a lamplit London, Elizabeth weighed the relative misery of her many misfortunes. The fierce upbraiding delivered by the ever-vindictive Irene had been easy to endure, and she hadn't really minded the loss of the yellow second-hand dress she had hated on first sight. She had very much missed the week's worth of dinners the episode in the library had cost her, and she certainly had not enjoyed the time spent coaxing ink off the carpet and chair. But this other punishment, these endless hours spent with Diana and her new suitor, could only be considered torture. There had to be something wrong with a man willing to marry a widow for its title. Elizabeth wished for all the world that she could see it when she looked at Adam Black. Legs extended and crossed at the ankles, hands folded in his lap, he was dressed in black breeches, black waistcoat embroidered with silver thread, a greatcoat with silver buttons, and a snow-white shirt all but devoid of lace. His boots were polished to a sheen and the silver-topped cane he carried clearly hid a blade. Black was the picture of a perfect English aristocrat, though he had no title at all. And Elizabeth had come to feel grudging admiration for the workmanlike way he marched through these social engagements. He took Diana to dinner, to the theatre, to balls, to the country. He gave her elegant gifts she could show off to her friends, and he let her prattle on for hours about anything that entered her little head. By the end of most evenings Elizabeth wanted to throttle the girl, but Adam was patient with her from first to last. Elizabeth belatedly noticed that Adam was staring at her, and she turned her head to look out the window. How long had she been looking at him? It was hard to know. Time seemed to stop during these endless engagements. A flush crept up her face when he did not look away. Clearly he was punishing her for her long examination. Still staring at Elizabeth, Adam spoke to Diana.
What did you think of the play?
I cannot tell, my lord. Perhaps you shall say to me. Was it good?
Only if you enjoyed it, my lady.
Elizabeth was glad her opinion wasn't sought. She would have said Hamlet had been 40 if he were a day and Ophelia had been too drunk to remember her lines. Diana predictably leapt to a topic she could discuss with ease.
Did the dressmaker send my gown for our ball? I look very well in it. It is made with blue silk and silver thread. It has tiny silk roses and little green leaved. I hope you will be pleased.
I am sure it is very beautiful,
said Adam. Fortunately, before Elizabeth was forced to endure more stultifying conversation, the carriage arrived at the Widham townhouse. A servant pulled open the carriage door and Adam stepped down from the conveyance. He turned to catch Diana about her waist and brought her gently to the ground. Elizabeth came to the door of the carriage prepared to alight with the help of a footman, as she always did, but she found Adam's hands coming to rest just above her hips. He lifted her out and set her on the ground so effortlessly her breath caught and her heart stopped. She watched him turn away without deigning to look at her, and saw him accompany Diana up the wide steps into the house. Elizabeth followed a moment later, her eyes lowered, aware that the footman and coachman were now watching her every move. Of course it was correct for Adam to lift her out of the coach. He could do whatever he wanted. No one would expect her to stop him. And yet, somehow, it was not at all proper. Her station was so low he should give no indication at all that he could see her. As was her custom, Elizabeth waited outside the front door in silence for Diana and Adam to say their goodbyes. She lowered her eyes when Adam strode past her out of the house, then turned her head to see him get into the coach. Her eyes followed the carriage as it rounded the arc of gravel to the front gate, all its lanterns swinging. As Elizabeth entered the house and followed Diana up the front staircase, she could still feel Adam's hands upon her. Why had he treated her so? Had he wanted to punish her for staring at him throughout the long play or watching him in the carriage? If so, he had succeeded. She had never been more desperate to leave this place. She never wanted to see him again. He had managed to make her feel embarrassed, gauche, and stupid without saying a word. It was as if she was trapped forever in that ugly moment in which they first met. Once Diana was safely ensconced in bed with her evening chocolate, Alice and Elizabeth bid each other a swift farewell and crept in different directions. Alice slept downstairs in quarters off the kitchen with one of the kitchen maids. Elizabeth had been assigned a frigid room just under the eaves, ostensibly so she could be closer to Diana. Elizabeth silently slipped up the stairs and into her room. Once there, she moved a chair under the doorknob and then inched her bed forward to press against the chair. It had been almost 2 months since her uncle had captured her upon the servant's stair. She had not forgotten the feel of his mouth on hers, his hands crushing her breasts, or the terrible words he had whispered to her. She knew next time he got his hands on her, he would not let her escape. A bed and a chair should not be relied upon to protect a woman's honor, but for the moment it was all she had. Elizabeth lit her stub of a candle, pulled off her clothes, and released her riotous auburn hair from its many pins. Her eyes instinctively sought herself in the cracked mirror in the corner of the room. Over long legs, slim hips, flat belly, small round breasts, and a lion's mane of red-gold hair that curled around her face, over her shoulders, and down her back. Unlike Diana, she was far from stout. Lady Widham's penchant for denying her dinner and Diana's many errands every day left Elizabeth lean enough to see the outline of her ribs in the flickering light. The only feature she recognized in the image she saw were the green eyes that flickered like jewels in the half-light. She knew her gaze was too direct, too unladylike to be countenanced, but she felt they accurately reflected her soul. Elizabeth crawled into bed and stared up at the slanted plaster of the ceiling. It was time to face facts. At her father's death she'd fallen into servitude, fit only to be a companion or a governess, servant to other women with no home of her own. That was her fate and she must stomach it. She had youth but no great beauty, breeding but no money, and no one in this world cared whether she lived or died. Watching Black and Diana, spending day after day in their presence, she was continually confronted by the knowledge that they lived in a world apart, a world above hers. She would never rise to their level. She could not accept this and yet she had to. A heavy thud outside her room startled Elizabeth from her thoughts. Again the sound came, and she recognized it as a stumbling tread upon the narrow steps leading up into her room. Then someone tried her door, turned the handle and tried to push it open. Her uncle spoke to her as he tried to make his way in.
"Open the door, lass."
His voice must be loud enough to hear in the kitchens. She saw the doorknob began to turn. Elizabeth said nothing, her hands over her mouth.
"Open the door. You must let me in."
He was now shoving hard. As it moved, the chair rocked and the bed rattled.
"Open the door. How dare you bar a door against me in my own house?"
His frustration mounted swiftly and in seconds he was pummeling the door. His infuriated curses echoed all around her.
"What is this?"
Irene's voice cut through his curses like a blade.
"Who is up there?"
"It is I, my love. I have seen a rat on the stair and I sought to kill it,"
said Lord Widham.
"You will not like to me, Henry. Come away from that filthy girl. You will not bet her in my house. I will send her away."
"You cannot, my love. She must stay. This is her home."
"No. You alone are master here. Your brother has died. You owe nothing to his bread."
"You do not understand. We cannot send her away."
"Hush now. You try me too much. You will come to bed now. And we will speak no more about it."
Elizabeth heard Lord Widham begin his unsteady descent down the stairs. She remained, hand pressed hard against her chest, struggling to draw a breath. Would Irene really cast her out? Elizabeth found herself summoned to the library early the next morning. She entered, cold with fear, to find the vaulted room dark, the hearth empty, and one sunlight doing little to illuminate what today looked like a cavern. Lady Widham was, uncharacteristically, at her desk, letters from creditors spread out before her. She looked up as Elizabeth entered, then nodded at the gaunt grey-haired Warwick to close the door. Elizabeth stopped when she stood just a few feet away. Lady Widham's eyes raked Elizabeth, seeing the breasts barely restrained by the buttons on the too small bodice of her worn grey dress, and her narrow waist. It was clear Irene loathed what she saw standing before her.
"At night's ball we announced that Anna is to marry,"
said Lady Widham.
"I will not have you remain in my house after she is gone. And you obviously may not travel with her to cause trouble in her new home. So you must make arrangements to go."
Lady Widham glanced at the bills beside her.
"You must find a new position. We have many obligations and we have extended our charity to you for too long."
"I am not a servant, my lady." Lady Widham's face went white with fury.
You are a country cousin left in that by a wistful father and a slut mother who married for love. We owe you nothing. You are nothing at all to us.
My uncle promised that he would take care of me. He swore on his life that I should always have a home with him.
Henry would never make such an oath. Once my Vienna is married and you will be gone. Find a new place or I put you on the street like a mongrel dog.
Elizabeth was speechless at the madness of this. This had once been her house, her library, her books. Everything around her had belonged to her father and mother, but now she had nothing. How could this be? Only because she was a daughter? Elizabeth found herself at the door to the room without quite knowing how she came there. In the hall, her heart felt like hard stone in her chest, and as she walked up the steps toward Diana, she prayed she would soon wake up from this dream. Why had her father made no provision for her? Why had she been left with nothing, her uncle with all? Her father Richard Wyndham had seemed so kind, so loving, when she was growing up. There could be no more doting a father than he had been to an only child who had lost her mother at birth. But in the end he had been terribly cruel. He had given her no place in the world before his death. He had consigned her to ruin. Hours later Elizabeth sat beside Diana in mute attendance at her cousin's engagement ball. Her cheap grey gown, plain beside Diana's white silk confection, clearly identified her as a servant. Thus to the merry men and women around her she was invisible. At Diana's request she fetched tea and cakes, delivered notes to Irene, and wrote names on a dance card. Beyond that she did nothing except sit on a little stool behind and below her cousin watching the ball go by. It was with some dismay that she heard Adam announced and looked toward the door. He was entering the ballroom in the company of a lord and lady as light as he was dark. They were dressed in glittering clothes and everything about them indicated they were the wealthiest peers in the room. The man was perhaps 6 inches shorter than Adam, not quite so muscular, and perhaps a bit stockier. His wife was a vision. Silver hair, clear blue eyes, flawless skin, beautiful in every way Elizabeth was not. Elizabeth heard someone speaking, and had some notion it might be to her, but she couldn't take her eyes off Black and the beautiful people with whom he had entered the room.
Elizabeth, are you listening? You must bring me my ivory silk crepe. You must go at once. Do you hear me?
Said Diana. She punctuated her words with a hard pinch on Elizabeth's arm. Elizabeth looked at Diana in shock. Then she rose. Realizing Diana must have been speaking to her for some time and she had been too dazed to hear. If Diana became angry with her before her wedding, Irene would have her out of the house even sooner.
Yes, I'm so sorry, Diana. I will collect it right away.
Elizabeth said, trying to hide her panic. Diana looked away as if Elizabeth hadn't spoken, nodding her head at one of the young women who had just discovered they would be bridesmaids at the slightly scandalous wedding of a very wealthy bastard to a title-bearing daughter. Elizabeth darted around the circle of dancers at the center of the ballroom and past the tables of sweetmeats and sparkling libations. She rushed through the kitchens, up the back stair, down the dark hall, all while working to control an overwhelming feeling of envy and injustice. If her father had lived, she would be the equal of the people below. She might have been betrothed. She might have had a ball. As Elizabeth let herself into Diane's room, she belatedly realized the oil lamps were out. She left the door open and made her way across the warm wool carpet to the fire where wax tapers waited for just such moments. She reached up to take one from the basket on the mantel and her blood froze. There was someone behind her. Lord Wyndham's hand covered her mouth before she could even manage a scream.
You must not be afraid,
her uncle said as he pulled her toward the bed. This time, to Elizabeth's horror, he wasn't drunk.
It is no sin. A man may even marry his brother's daughter. So why may he not keep her for his whore?
As he spoke he shoved her toward the bed, his hands were tearing at the fragile fabric of the old gown she had been given to wear for tonight's event. His hands struggled to find her breasts through her corset. Elizabeth, too horrified to think through her actions, turned away from the bed and made for the door. When her uncle's fat fingers dug into her shoulder she turned to claw at his face. He was everything her father had not been and she loathed him for it. She found herself trying to blind him, scratching for his eyes and dragging her nails down his cheeks. As his hands went up toward her off, she brought her foot down hard on his high-court shoe. At his gasp she ran for the door. Her uncle caught her by the hair as she entered the hall. Pins went flying, her neck bent back, she spun to face him, driving the heel of her hand up into his nose. She fell back as blood poured down his chest, painting his fine linen shirt and blue waistcoat red. She ran down the stairs and paused, not knowing where to turn.
through the house into the party? If he went down the back stairs, he could catch her in the kitchens where no one would help her. Should she rush outside? Where would she go then?
She had to hide. Seeing the door to the library open, she raced in, slammed the door shut, and put her back to it.
Heart pounding, she stood there wondering what on earth should she do.
If she cried rape, Widom would just call her a liar. Did that matter? Did anything matter? How could she block the door?
And why are you all aflutter?
Adam Black asked. He had been standing near the fire, drink in hand, when she burst in. Now he was staring at her mystified. Before Elizabeth could respond, she was thrown forward hard. Lord Widom burst into the room with all the fury of a bull in rut. His nose was broken, his breathing was labored, and as Elizabeth and he squared off, she knew he meant to kill her.
Look what you have done to me. I will have you at the knackers by dawn.
Stay away, Elizabeth cried. She grabbed a decanter of brandy by its long neck and threw it at him hard. It flew past his head to shatter on a bookcase. Before she could do anything else, Black strode across the room like a demon from the underworld. In an instant he had Lord Widom's ear in his fist and he was pounding the man's head hard against the selfsame bookcase, unmindful of the blood that spurted from his broken face. After several hard blows, Adam dropped the unconscious man to the floor and kicked the door shut. Black turned to Elizabeth, not the least ruffled.
Care to explain?
Elizabeth tried to reply but found herself falling instead, dropping as if her legs had been cut right out from under her. Elizabeth came to herself some time later. She was resting her head against Black's chest. He was holding her in his lap as he sat in a chair before the fire, and belatedly she realized she was shaking so hard that her teeth were chattering. Her uncle had tried to rape her. He had wanted to kill her. Every minute of every hour her life became more of a nightmare. Had her uncle really said he would send her to the knackers?
You put up quite a good fight,
said Adam.
I think you could have taken him if you had come further into the room and taken up the fire iron instead of the brandy.
Elizabeth barely heard the words. After her father had died, her uncle had come, summoned from London by the vicar, filled with promises about how he would care for her. Later he had told her, oh so gently, that he had inherited nothing but mortgaged estates that would have to be sold. He'd brought her here, to his house, swearing he would treat her as a second daughter. But he and his wife had turned her into a servant instead, and at last they had meant to make her a whore. Her uncle had sworn that he would treat her as a second daughter.
I am sure this is not the first nor the last time this will happen. Your employer is the kind of man who would ever let a pretty skirt like you live in his house unmolested.
Uncle,
Elizabeth said. Black looked toward the man on the floor.
He is your uncle? I wish I were more surprised. Henry and Irene are such vermin.
Elizabeth let her head rest against Black's chest and felt his breath stir her hair. This man she had silently cursed and reviled for the many weeks of his exhausting courtship had saved her life again. She should rise, run to her room, pack what little she had, and run away. She should find something expensive she could steal and sell. But what if she were caught? What if her uncle were dead? She might hang for murder. All these thoughts raced through her head, but what she said was,
"Do you think Diana is better, my lord? She is as shallow and cruel as her mother and as thoughtless and stupid as her father. You must be blind if you have not seen it."
Adam shifted his position and she looked up to see he was smiling wryly.
"Of course I am not blind."
Then his lips brushed hers, once, twice, a third time. Then a hand came to raise her chin and he deepened the kiss. His tongue parted her lips and his hand trailed down her neck to lie warm on her breasts. After a long moment he broke the kiss and rested his head against hers in an odd sort of communion. As the pounding in his chest slowed, he stood, carefully putting her feet on the ground. As he stepped back he said,
"I save you from rape and then steal a kiss. My true colors at last."
Elizabeth stood, wavering slightly, feeling the cold and fear take her again now that he was no longer holding her.
"How did you fall in with these base creatures?"
he said.
"My father died leaving me alone in the world. My aunt and uncle took me in," she said.
A chiming in the hall made Black look up.
"Are the witching hour? How appropriate. I must return to the ball and make the announcement that I and Diana are to wed."
Elizabeth looked toward her uncle.
"Perhaps he has bled to death. At the very least I think he will sleep a little longer."
Black studied her for a long moment.
"In honor of our new kinship, I shall relieve the Widoms from the burden of poor relation they clearly care nothing for. You run along now and change your clothes, then go wait in my carriage. I know you know it. You will find it at the end of the drive ready to flee this mawkish hell as soon as I can decently take my leave. Be sure no one sees you. I have no desire to court scandal in this already sordid affair.
And then Adam Black was striding from the room, leaving Elizabeth alone and in shock. Was he serious? Did he seriously expect her to flee into the night with a man she knew almost nothing of? How did she know his intentions were any more honorable than her uncle's? And yet, what was her alternative? To remain here until morning and face the ire and abuse meted out by Irene? Elizabeth raced past her still unconscious uncle and up the stairs. In her room, she collected the two remaining dresses in her wardrobe and the extra pair of worn shoes under her bed. Then she ran back down the steps, out the front door, and along the gravel drive past all the waiting coaches. She tried to keep to the shadows and prayed that no one saw her, but the number of people outside the ball was at least twice the number parading around the dance floor. She was overjoyed to find Black's carriage waiting at the gate exactly as he had described. She opened the door, slipped inside, and then lay down on one of the long benches with a pounding heart. It was pure madness to trust this volatile man she knew nothing of, but any fate on earth was better than another moment in her uncle's house. Voice recording copyright 2020 by Nancy Fulton. All rights reserved. Music by Johnny Blake, licensed from Pond 5. Visit audioand.com to find the best in audio fiction.